First Thanksgiving's trip was all in on nighttime. No, I didn't do that one. No, I was safely in my office in St. Louis. The way we did those trips is we filed as a Gulfstream 5 out of Washington, D.C., out of Andrews. At nighttime, it wasn't. We actually had a Gulfstream that went out and taxied out, took off, and we just assumed his identity for the rest of the trip. That's how they did the nighttime one. On that one, just as they were coasting into Europe, I think it was UPS or FedEx passed by and noticed it was Air Force One, 747, and just asked the controller, hey, who do you have at my 3 o'clock at 29,000 feet? And the controller said, I have a US Air Force G5. And there was silence. And if the guy had said anything on the radio, the UPS, I think it was UPS, if the guy had said anything on the radio, they would have aborted into England. He kept his mouth shut. Yeah, I don't know if he understood, but he kept his mouth shut and they kept going. But the second time we did it, the time that we did it, where we landed in the daytime, we got a little bit smarter and we filed as a G5. And we put the Secret Service up into the tower, and because it's a civilian tower at Andrews Air Force Base, and said, that is now a G5. We took off. We filed to Kuwait City, I believe. And then they took everyone in the tower, and they brought them out and locked them in VOQ rooms for the entire duration of the trip. VOQ rooms with no phones. They told them, you can call, make one phone call, tell them you're going to be late. And you can sit here and watch TV all night. So that worked out pretty well. We didn't have any security issues that night. Yes, they're twins. There's two of the exact same airplanes, 28,000 and 29,000. And the purpose of that, first, the purpose is when one goes into heavy maintenance, you still have a 747. The secondary purpose is on all the trips, there is a hot spare somewhere nearby. And the rumor is it's a decoy airplane. That's not exactly true. Well, it's not true. But so if we're flying in the States and say we go to L.A., the backup airplane will go to a military field within 300 miles of L.A. And it will be there. The crew will be ready. When the next departure comes, there'll be a crew in that seat, engines running. And as soon as the primary airplane with the president on board, flaps go to the takeoff configuration, he releases that airplane and they go on to the next stop. In the years I flew the 747, I only saw three occasions where they had to actually use the airplane, only one where they swapped. And the swap was done at LAX. It was done after the arrival. No one knew it. And when we swapped the airplanes are so identical that we will move books and cups, things that they don't want moved, put it all in the exact same spot, and no one ever knows we swapped airplanes. The water board room? It seemed like everyone that I was on, when I crossed the ocean, was kind of like waterboarding. When I got hired to fly it, I was the a captain. Everyone knows the military rank. Captain is an 03. They had hired a captain before me, and he lasted 6 months, and they had fired him. So I was the only captain, and everyone else was a colonel. So needless to say, I was the guy that did all the waterboard stuff. Seemed like it. All right, let's talk about the people real quick. Am I running too far over, Steve? Or all right? Did I tell you about that picture? No, yeah, I did. Okay, this is this picture's. This woman right here is her name's Deb Kuth. Does anyone in the audience know who Deb Kuth is? Since we're in Wisconsin, no, she's from Hartford, Wisconsin. When I was in St. Louis, and she was my assistant. She was talking about Veterans Day here, or what do they call it, Oshkosh? But she was my assistant when we were buying modifications and doing all this classified stuff for Air Force One. And she was a captain, prior enlisted. She was a linguist, Chinese linguist, and she became a maintenance officer, lieutenant, and then came to me as a captain, as my assistant there. And she was the greatest worker ever. And when I had to go back to Air Force One, I brought her along with me, and she became the commander for Air Force One's maintenance squadron. And they told her, well, you need to get out. We'll promote you to major. You need to get out, though. Well, she retired as the deputy commander of all of Air Force One, the only non-pilot ever to hold the position. And she just retired. She's from Hartford, Wisconsin. I mention this because usually a Wisconsin audience and everyone gets excited. You guys don't seem too excited by that, though. All right, someone clapped. All right. As you can see there, everyone on Air Force One. Now, I had to put this bullet in here because I don't know how many times over the last 15 years someone came up to me and said, so you flew Air Force One. Were you in the military? And I don't understand it. Air Force One is all Air Force personnel. Even the flight attendants are all Air Force. We have five, you see that Air Force GS is government service. But everyone on Air Force One is Air Force. All the pilots, all the engineers, all the radio operators, the flight attendants, the maintenance guys. So we have two squadrons in the group. One's a maintenance squadron, one's the ops squadron. You can see the maintenance squadron, they have about, it goes from 100 to 120. Now it says up there one officer, I believe. It's now two. They just finally hired the other guy that worked for me in St. Louis to take over for the girl Deb, and they've created a second position. So now there's two, and I should change that slide. Sorry about that. All the maintenance guys are qualified on the G3, the 757, and the 747. The G3 is because the president has three G3s assigned to him, and the 757, which is now becoming the new short field airplane for the president. The president really did not enjoy flying the G3s, so he figured a 757 can now go to 5,000, well, it can go to a 5,000 foot strip, so we've been using it whenever the rest of the airfield can handle the bigger airplane. We have an admin staff of 9 people, and they actually fly with us, they take turns flying with us, and they still help out with the White House staff printing up speeches and such. As far as the air crew, the pilots, I told you there's 8 pilots. Every pilot is dual qualified. They have to fly the 747, and then they fly either the 757 or the G3. So we split them down the middle. That way we can have enough pilots to fly on every airplane. The Air Force is very, very anti-multiple qualifications. Just to have dual qualifications is kind of rare. If you're not a test pilot, then you almost never see dual qualifications. We still have navigators on board, believe it or not. Big navigator station in the cockpit, called the Navigator Cave. And they're primarily responsible for mission planning and timing. And if you ever watch the documentaries, the timing of Air Force One is one of the most important things we do. On that 12-hour flight, the reason why we kept bugging people saying, can we come early, because we have to establish a time, and that time gets spread all over the White House network as the zero time that security will start and go backwards or forward from that zero time at the airports. So if we say we're going to be at a place at 1310, that means when the second hand on your perfect setting watch hits the 12, that the wheel will stop rolling. You'll see the wheel actually stop, and you'll see the second hand at the same time. And we do that probably about 99% accurate on doing that. And the way we do it is just detailed planning, and the navigators get into that, to the point that we know the exact distances that we're going to taxi every time we take off. So that's what the navigator is there for. And if you're not adjusting to make their times, I tell this story. I've been on flights that are 10 hours long, And at the 5-hour point, when I'm just sitting in the seat wondering when I can finally get out of the seat, all of a sudden you'll hear the navigator say, "You're 30 seconds late." You got 5 hours left. And you don't respond because you think it's asinine, but he'll come back, the colonel will say, "I said you're 30 seconds late, what are we going to do?" But they will, once you start in the descent, it's about every 30 seconds, they will give you an update. And it will be 180 miles, 28 seconds, 115 miles, 21 seconds. And if you're not making up the time, they start getting, and I always tell, it's like driving with your wife, kind of, you know, it's... You guys can laugh, they won't see you. We have radio operators on board. Did I tell you, I didn't even talk about the cockpit on the airplane. But anyway, cockpit, navigator station, we still have engineers because it's a 200. And then if you go aft, we have a crew rest area and then a radio operator area. And those are the guys that do all the phone calls. So all those 93 phones that I told you about, someone downstairs picks the phone up. They can't dial themselves. They get the radio operator. He says, "Give me to the ambassador to China." And he'll say, "Okay, stand by." And he'll look in his giant book of numbers, and they'll have the satellites are shown in the screens above him, and he can see what satellites are coming. Hooks into satellites, makes the phone call, plugs them into the seat, and says, "The ambassador of China is on board, on the phone." We got three of them on one side that does that. On the other side, we have one guy who stares at a computer terminal that's constantly updating, pinging back and forth between the White House Situation Room. And that guy just sits there and makes sure that the thing pings back and forth. The White House Situation Room will say, "I'm here." He'll write, "I'm here." And he'll do that just about every 8 to 10 seconds. Positive communications all times. There's another one up there now that actually divvies up bandwidth of the internet to make sure that when the president suddenly decides to do a video teleconference through the internet, secure, of course, he can shut people off. So you might be up there just in the middle of purchasing a book on Amazon, and next thing you know, it's the president's making VTC. Flight attendants, told you all about them. We fly with about 18, and I've seen up to 21, 22, all Air Force. They're great. And then we have our own security force on board. Real quick on the mission. The airplanes are solely dedicated to the White House, and there's been two exceptions that I know of. And the first was we were going to Kuala Lumpur out of Washington, D.C., and at takeoff time, the helicopter showed up with Al Gore instead of Bill Clinton, and found out that the president was bombing Sudan or something like that. So he couldn't come. So he had asked Al Gore to go in his place, so we took Al Gore there. It was kind of cruel, though. We wouldn't take him back. Actually, I thought it was pretty hurt. All the way to Kuala Lumpur, some green summit or something like that. It was actually a green summit. Well, we left the backup in Washington, D.C. so the president could catch up when he was done bombing. I forget who he was bombing that day. I think it was Sudan. And so we took the backup and flew when the president was ready. And as soon as the backup left with the president, which is now the primary, the one in Kuala Lumpur turned into our backup, left Gore and came and sat next to us. So he got home somehow, I'm pretty sure. The other one I flew, the king of Saudi Arabia died, and President Bush, he had been ill for a long time, and it wasn't really that momentous of an occasion. So President Bush had sent Dick Cheney there, and we flew, believe it or not, nonstop from Washington, D.C. to Riyadh. He got off the airplane, ate lunch with the new king, got back on, and we went home. I think we were on the ground for 2 hours and 15 minutes. a long day.
Do you take 4 pilots
on this trip? No. We do 2 pilots for stateside and then 3 pilots for any overseas trips, regardless of how long they are. And we cycle through. We have a nice crew rest area, which I'll show you real quick. I can't believe I didn't talk about the upstairs. Kind of rushing. I feel like I'm getting way behind. Upstairs, you can see just past the after the flight deck is the crew lounge. And you see on the left-hand side, there's 4 bunks there, so we can cycle through those bunks. And they're pretty comfortable, so we can get some decent rest. Those 2 sets of first-class chairs you see facing each other, they have a table there, and that's where the crew will eat. And that's all upstairs. And you can see the radio operator's section behind there.